Evening, everyone. This is Gordon W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okay, that's a good answer. Yeah, well, good evening, everyone. Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net is run each week on a frequency of 146.955 megahertz. PL is 141.3. 41.3, and the offset is minus 600 kilohertz. Stations are welcome to check in via the radio, and when we call for it, via Echolink at K2 Foxtrot Juliet dash Lima. K2 Foxtrot Juliet dash Lima. This is a directed net, but a little different than the other directed nets you're used to. It's more about having a conversation about amateur radio, telecommunications, electronics, computers, the underlying science, technologies that drive our hobby, what we've done with it, what we'd like to do with it, things we never want to do again, things we'd really like to do again, how we applied our ham radio, and those we applied it with and for whose benefit. It's all good. In any case, if you are interested in having a conversation, this is a good place to come play. Alrighty, so the way we check into this net's a little different than others. We check in with our call sign, our name, and we indicate whether we have a question, a comment, a for sale swap or wanted item, or some combination of those things, or none of the above. You might ask, why would I check in if it's none of the above? Well, because that way we can figure out how to manage the net toward something that you might find interesting. Not only that, but you might find yourself as an opportunistic resource for the net, because someone may know that you know something that really hasn't occurred to you. So a little cajoling, we might be able to help out the community at large. So with no further ado, let's start with the call signs that begin with the letter A for Alpha. Please call your call sign, your name, and begin with your question, comment. For sale or swap a wanted item, some combination of those things, or none of the above, please call K2BAR. All right, let's go right to the Novembers for a change. All righty, how about the Whiskey Twos?
J-E-K, Don, question and a comment.
Very good, Don. Very, very good. And we'll see you in a couple minutes with that question and comment. Probably take your comment and then question, but that's all right. Any other whiskeys?
Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, Randy, Washington Township, with a comment.
With a comment at this time.
Okay, good evening, Randy. You had a comment, got you covered there. Who was the other station who got doubled on?
Whiskey 2, November Papa Radio, Hector, no questions or comments at this time.
Evening, Hector. Very good. Any other whiskeys?
WR2LYT, Bill, Rivervale, just lurking.
Evening, Bill. Your trip went well. Any other whiskeys?
LCN, the name is Rick, with one question.
Very good, Rick. Noted your question. Any other whiskeys?
W2APP, Paul Harrington Park, none of the above.
Ray, White Plains, none of the above. Good evening.
Wow, got two for the price of one and got them both. All right, very good, Paul. Very good evening, Ray. So we got you two guys squared away. Anybody else with a whiskey?
W-E-2-R, Charlie, just listening.
Evening, Charlie. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys? All right, how about kilos?
This is Kilo Charlie to Papa Yankee Bravo, Richard. No traffic.
Evening, Rich. Welcome aboard. Any kilos?
K2ZO, Jim, with a single computer question.
I don't know. I don't run a dating service for computers, but okay. I couldn't bear. You gotta give me that one, Jim. All right. Anyway, moving right along. Any other kilos?
IR coming.
Okay, Howie, I got your comment. Who is the station just lost to Howie?
KB2 TRW Kai 1 comment.
Using Kai with 1 comment, no problem. Any other kilos?
82DDK, Gary, listening.
Evening, Gary. Any other kilos?
Kilo Charlie 2, Oscar, India, India. John, just listening.
Evening, John. Welcome aboard. Any other kilos?
This is K2NUD listening.
Hey, Matt. Welcome aboard. Haven't heard you in forever. Any questions, comments, for sale, swap, or wanted items?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, very good. Well, good to hear you anyway. Any other kilos? All right, any other stations, any call sign format?
N2IZ.
2IZ, your name, and what's your pleasure, sir?
Okay, good evening. The name here is John Juliet Oscar Hotel November, location North Yonkers, New York. And no questions or comments right now, but I'll be listening in for the duration of the net, or as long as I can into the duration. And, you know, should anything come up or any interesting questions arise where I can add some expertise, I'll throw in my 2 cents. So with that, we'll turn it back to Net Control. This is N2YZ.
Okay, John, very good. No problem. Any other check-ins? A pretty lively and large group tonight. All right, very good. W2JEK. Oh, wait, before I give it to you, Don. Are there any check-ins via EchoLink? Please call KTBAR. Okay, very good. All right, W2JEK, Don, over to you, KQBAR.
Okay, KQBAR in the net is W2JEK. This is my comment tonight. I'm announcing that Barra will be running a VE test session on Friday, March the 21st at 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School. We're in classroom 123. Coming, you will need some form of ID, like a driver's license or a passport or whatever. And $15 is the fee. For a license, please bring your license and a copy of that license. And if you want to use a calculator, you may, provided the memory is clean. Other items such as a cell phone or iPod, etc., may not be used as a calculator. If you do not have a license already, you will need a social security number or obtain a FRN number. If you do not wish to use your social number at our test session. With that, back to Net.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Don. Are there any questions or comments about the upcoming test sessions or licensing in general for Don? Okay, Don, any follow-up?
Not at this time. I have a question for K2ZO when we get around to the questions, though.
Good a time as any.
Okay, I have a question for you, Jim, K2ZO. In your 40-meter off-center fat dipole, you have said you had a 4-to-1 ballon up at the feed point. Now, does this antenna require a tuner on any bands or all bands or just what? I know you do get it to work on, I think, 6 to 80 meters, but mainly I'm interested in the 40 through 10-meter portion of it, and I'm wondering, do you need a tuner down at the shack with that setup, or can you get away with it, or do you get away with it on some bands without it, and some bands with? Maybe you can tell me that. Back to Net, W2JK.
Okay, very good, Don. Thank you. Very, very good. Anybody have any additional thoughts? Okay. K2ZO, your question, sir. K2BR.
Okay, I'm back on the other side of the room. This is K2ZO. First, the answer to Don. Don, if you put it up and in the clear, it'll cover all of the 10, 15, and you'll have to trim the feed line a little bit to make it work on 15. But if you fool around with the feed line, you can do it. But on all the other bands, not the walk bands, but all the other bands, you don't need a tuner. On the walk bands, you do need a tuner. But there are a couple of different versions of it. If you go and do a Google search, you'll see that there's some people that came up with an improved one that has a little bit higher SWR on 80 and on 40, but a better SWR on 10. So you do a little bit, but it's not the greatest. We're going to get down on like about 2 or 3 to 1 on some of the bands. Maybe 10 meters. You may see that unless you start fooling around with the feed line. I personally use mine with a tuner, and that takes care of the problem. And of course, the other one that I made is fed with 300 ohm line, with the 4 to 1 right down at the radio, and I do have the tuner on there, and it works fine. So there you go. Okay.
Okay, Jim. That's what I wanted to know. Okay, so I'll probably have to figure on using a tuner then. Okay, thank you very much. WCJEK, back to that.
Very good, very good. Anybody else have any thoughts for Don? Okay, do you want my question now?
Yeah, a second, hang on.
Okay, off to your question, Mr. Jim. Okay, I've been fooling around with Windows 7. It works great. I like it. Windows XP is going away, and I invested in Windows 7. And I did it by the book and did a whole clean install on a brand new drive. Had a big 2-terabyte drive were on sale, and I did it. Now, what it did is when it installed Windows, it made two partitions on the drive. It made the one, of course, which is drive C, and it made another drive, another, which is F. It's labeled System Reserved. And it put 35, a lot of stuff. It's a 100 meg drive. I think I'll take a look at it here just a minute. Let me see what it did. It took of my main big hard drive, it made another drive, another partition that was 100 meg, 100 meg, and of that it put 35 meg of something, which I don't see. Again, I know it's there when I do the properties, but yet with just the simple, using Windows Explorer here, I don't see it. Now, is that some kind of an image or something that allows me to restore it? I know I've read something about stuff like that, but I, of course, have the disk. So I don't need that. Tell me what that is. Back to that, K2ZO.
Well, that's pretty much it, Jim. It is a restoral, index set, as it were. My problem with the way they do that is they put it on the same media. Now, in all fairness, a lot of disk failures are not hard failures, or they're not totally catastrophic. So, that other partition that has drive D with all the recovery elements in it, not so bad. I mean, it's not going to recover your data, but what it'll do is it'll recover your license in case you don't have disks. And that's basically what it's designed to do.
Okay, but I have no information on how to use that. And of course, when I go on here and try to do a look at it, it's not there. It's invisible to me. Maybe it's hidden, all hidden files, I don't know. But, or it's just that it's in some kind of binary form that I can't read it. So I would need some kind of other software to extract and restore from that. Is that the way it works?
WU2S comment?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Jim, WU2S. What the position is there for is mostly for a reserved area for BitLocker encryption. And so the point is, if you're absolutely sure you're never going to use BitLocker to encrypt, you really don't need that space. And you need if you were going to fiddle with that or delete that partition, which is certainly possible and probably wouldn't harm anything that you're doing, you'd need a disk partition editor that's not using a graphical user interface. I think there is something called disk part for Windows 7. WU2S back to net control.
Yeah, Randy, I know that it's used with BitLocker as well, but I thought it was also part of the recovery scheme, and I, frankly, like Jim, have never found anything to that effect. But, you know, are you saying that's really the sole purpose of that?
It's one of the two main purposes. The other is it holds the, I believe it's a backup copy of the boot configuration files. But again, it's mostly an artifact for BitLocker.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Alrighty. Anybody else have any thoughts?
It's K2NUD with a comment.
I'm particularly interested in if you know of anybody who's actually, you know, had to use that backup configuration file. Go ahead.
If you want to see it in a, you can see it easily in a graphical user interface. If you click your Windows button and then go to where it says Computer and right-click it and choose the word Manage, it'll open up a management panel, and one of them is under Storage. It's called Disk Management. If you bring that up, it'll show you that this is the system reserved partition, and it's usually very tiny. On mine, it's a 300 gig drive, and this is just using 100 megabytes. So 100 megabytes of 300 gigs is basically nothing, and it's basically a reserve space for things like BitLocker or other things that the system operating system uses hidden-wise. So it should really be almost nothing part of your drive, and that's a good way to see it in a graphical interface.
This is K2ZO.
You're at Jim.
Okay, fine. Yes, I did that. I figured that out. And I got into disk management, and of course I saw that. And of course initially it did not have a drive number. And so I said, okay, let's give it a drive number. It gave me the opportunity to do that. And then I had a drive number, so it gave me a drive number. But then when I got on it, I could see that I had 65 megabytes. Now, I'm just really asking these questions just to learn something, because you're right, it's only a small portion of a great big drive, and it's really not all that important. But I just thought it might be a neat place to just store stuff that I may want and don't want anybody to tinker with. What I was trying to do was actually see what that 35 megabyte worth of stuff was, and what if I went to partition that drive, to format that drive. Would I take that 35 megabytes out of there? Would it go disappear? My question was, I didn't want to do that because I was afraid it might affect the operating system or do something. So I just figured I'd leave it alone. But I was scratching my head, and of course I don't really have a whole lot of paperwork and knowledge of information on Windows 7 other than what I've read, what I've been able to pick up, and what I've kind of taught myself. And I did look at a book, and it didn't tell me anything about this. But if I wanted to take that out of there and make use of the space, I didn't know how I would do that. But probably won't ever really do that. But yes, I did manage to get into Disk Manager and actually see what it was and see how it had done it, but I was still confused. Thanks again for your answer. This is K2ZO.
K2N, you do have a comment?
Go ahead, Matt.
Taken right from Microsoft, it says, this stub of our partition, which is new to Windows 7, serves two functions. It holds the boot manager code and the boot it reserves space for the startup files required by BitLocker, like the other gentleman said. If you Google, and I will give you the exact words, what is Windows 7 system reserve partition, the first one comes up TechNet from Microsoft, and it has a pretty good explanation. And there you go. It's a stub partition used for BitLocker and some other stuff. This is K2NUD. Over to you, Gordon.
That's good to know. So the Windows 7 reserve partition is fully explained on a Microsoft page. Well, one that you can actually understand, which is even more exciting, Matt. I've had my share of reading those going, okay, and I should do what with that information now? Anyway, so booting and BitLocker. Alrighty, so let's see. Jim, do you have anything else you want to ask or query about?
Oh, no, that's it, and I think I'll leave it alone. You know, I was just curious. I'm really enjoying Windows 7. I think it works very well. Having used XP for a long time, I find that I think it's a lot more stable. And I've not had any strange things happen like I've had with XP. But I'm very, very happy with it. And the price was right. You can buy a copy on eBay for $47. Of course, you don't get any documentation, but works fine, and it's legal. They got registered. Okay, thanks again. This is K2ZO.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. That's a really good thing. It's a really good thing. I'm glad people are able to do that. Given the high acceptability, I say, tongue-in-cheek, of Windows 8, I'm wondering what Windows 9 is going to look like and what its time frame is and its retro status vis-a-vis Windows 7. But anyway, we'll see. God knows Windows 8 retro status is not fun for the Windows 7 user or XP user or whatever. All right, well, thank you very much. That was a good question. Next one is Randy, your comment, W2S, W2, DTT.
Thanks, Gordon. Good evening to everyone on that. Two very short comments. First is, I've stumbled across the source of interesting information on the Internet that may be of interest to some of you, and it's at a site called homemadetools.net, and it's exactly what it says. It's a bunch of people that have contributed ideas about making homemade tools to solve problems that they've run into. You know, without going and purchasing commercially made stuff. There isn't a tremendous amount of ham radio related stuff, but there is a section for electrical tools, and there are some soldering aids and surface mount aids and fume extractors. And there's another section that may be of interest too on how people have made different workbenches. So I bring that up if you haven't heard of it before. It's probably worth a few minutes of your time taking a look at what other people have done. And back to Net Control.
That sounds like a lovely site. What is the name of the site one more time?
It's homemadetools.net. All one word.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Like that. Like that a lot. God knows we've all made little gadgets or use simple things. I've come up with a couple of different things to use to apply the iced tea containers. Maybe for the sugar-free iced tea that I drink. I don't drink Crystal Light. I drink the store brand, either ShopRite Stop and Shop. And actually, I prefer both of those to Crystal Light, but the containers are wonderful for not just storage, but also for a number of other interesting projects. So, anybody else that's been on this site or have similar sites in mind that they want to talk about? K2B Air.
K2EIR.
Howie, go ahead.
just a comment, I think, relevant to this, but kind of tangential. But I love the tool I got with my old heat kits. It was a plastic, let me call it a rod, but it had an opening that was made up with a nut, and I don't remember what, number six or number eight or whatever. And so it was a nut starter. You could put a nut in there and put it up against the hole and then put the screw through and twist it in, or if the screw was protruding, which was the usual way, you could take this nut starter and get the nut started on the screw without dropping it, and you didn't have to worry about anything magnetic or whatever. And I love that tool. I still have it, but I don't know where it is, which is the usual problem. But I'd like to find another one like that for sure. W2TTT from K2EIR.
Oh, sure. Yep. At one point, before they came out with vice grips with really creative clamps, I had taken a set of vice grips and some aluminum bar stock and crazy glued it to the chuck jaws at the end, so I had something that was long and flat that I could use to grab the end of a circuit board and hold it. That was my answer to a $45 clamping device. It cost too much money. I nestled the grips of the vice grip into essentially what looked like a socket, and stood it up into a socket, and then the jaws, which were now 3 inches wide, could grab the end of a circuit board without tearing it up, and that worked out very, very well, as long as you didn't overcompress it. But by distributing the force across the bar stock, it did pretty well. Had that tool for a lot of years. And if you just grabbed the end of the circuit board with a vice grip, you would have just taken a piece out of it, and that wouldn't have been good. Alrighty, anybody else? Okay, so Randy, just to recap, it's homemadetools.net.
Yes, that's it. And just one other quick comment, for those of you who may not have seen it yet, this month's issue of Make magazine has an interesting two-page article on using the Raspberry Pi and some code that you can download as a very low-powered FM radio transmitter, and they have instructions on how to create what the article has titled Raspberry Pirate Radio to broadcast in the commercial FM radio band. So you may want to take a look at that. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, back to net control.
Well, that Pi is working real hard to do that too. All righty. Unless the circuit, unless the external circuitry does all the oscillator stuff, but it just leaves us to do the modulation. Very good. That sounds really neat. Anybody else? Randy, back to you, and then we'll go to the next question.
Thank you. That's all for this evening. Back to net.
Very good, Randy. That's cool. W2LCN, if you're not embroiled in that website, it's your turn. Q2BAR.
All right. Thank you, Gordon. No, I was on the website. That was one of the first things I went to, and thank you, Randy. That's going to keep me pretty occupied for a lot of time. I like that site. The question I have is fairly simple but also kind of complex, so I'll put it out there expecting the simple answer, and then I'll look down the road to trying to develop something more complex. But I thought it'd be good for the net especially some of the new people, to understand how you would choose let's say, like an operating band or an operating frequency for a local public service event. We've got something coming up later on next month, and I'm starting to think about how would I orchestrate just simple communication, just basically working off of an HD or a mobile to try and assist a group in the community. How would you go about choosing the proper band or channel, and maybe how would you notify some of the people if you did want to use a repeater in the area? What are some of the necessary steps we'd look at to do something like that? So again, I know this is going to be a very complex answer or a very short answer, and I think for just the purpose of the net, just looking for a short answer to that question, how you might, or one person might try to go about that. So I will send it back over to the net, W2LPN, back to you, K2VAR.
Well, that is a loaded question. All right, so first thing you do is you have to look at what the likely radio population is going to have in the way of radios. That's number one. Number two, then you have to assess whether those radios are likely to be able to cover all or part of the posts that you need to cover. Number three, you have to decide, okay, let's say it's VHF or UHF. You have to decide whether or not there's a repeater needed to fill in gaps, and will that be sufficient? Because you could have a repeater, but it's not ideally situated, or it's just not going to be wonderful to make the grade. So you have some issues there. So you have to try to structure your communications plan around those basic factors. Then the next thing you have to deal with is the availability of a repeater. So if you know who the owner of the repeater, the trustee, you might say, well, gee, we've got this upcoming event, and we have some hams who'd like to, you know, support this activity, but we'd really like some support from your group, if possible. Work together, and we'd like to use your repeater, but more importantly, we really need your operators to stay with us, blah, 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 blah. This public service event, we can't have the operators, can at least use the repeater. That's generally the approach I would use. From there, you roll it out, figure it out. Yeah?
All right, thank you very much. That's kind of how I felt some of this would need to be approached. I'm sure that if it was a bigger event, you'd want to involve multiple agencies and things like this, but yeah, this is a question that came up. A local area going to do a small run around the park, and it's something they've done in the past, but they're going to look to try and get some communications. Looking at it, I think it's something that most people could do with an HT and simply selecting a channel. I don't think a repeater is required, but I just wondered how you might go about selecting that. I know we talked about community service, and it's a great way to get involved and kind of put ham radio out there in a positive light. But the idea of approaching something new, I mean, something that's existed, like some of these larger runs and things, like the bike race across Bergen County through Morris County, it's pretty extensive, but something much smaller. I haven't really heard much in terms of how that gets put together. So I do thank you for the information. It's kind of where I thought you'd go with it. And again, yeah, I thought it could be a difficult question, but at the same time, I thought it was beneficial for the net to know a simple couple of steps to putting something together. At any rate, I will send it back over to you, K2VAR, W2LPN. So thank you very much. W2JEK with a comment.
Good, Don.
Yeah, Rick, one thing that I've been on the River Edge run for a number of years. The power used to take care of that. And we had one station that was a net control, and he was at the starting point where this race started. He was also the liaison between amateur radio and police and fire department radio people who would be sending out an ambulance if a runner fell or something like that. So we always did a check-in to make sure that every post that we had along the way was able to make contact with that net control. That's something you had to think about, too. And where was that net control going to be, and where is he going to be? And he's going to have to be, he can't be anywhere. He's got to be where the fire department is going to be hanging out, or the police, or whoever is going to be handling the emergencies such as where an ambulance would be needed or something like that. So that's the thing you'll have to think about too. Back to net, W2JEK.
Yeah, that's a critically important function. And to make sure that your communication is in proximity to the decision makers. There's a couple of different ways to accomplish that. One is put the radio people where the radio people need to be in order to communicate effectively without too much, without relays, et cetera, and to have situational awareness. The other one is to, and then to relay to the if you will, the incident command, if you will. But the other approach is to locate them with the incident command, but with a certain level of removal and adjacency, just so that they don't have to listen to all the background chatter and that, you know, their deliberations are not carried over the radio advertently or inadvertently, as the case may be. But that's pretty much the game you got to play. Anybody else? All right. Does that answer your question, Rick?
Yeah, all that is very helpful. It sounds like it's something that I kind of had in my mind, but at the same time, I wanted to hear what other people thought. So thank you, Don, for putting that out there. It does make a good idea to have your radio staff located somewhat near the decision people as far as fire, first aid, and police, so that they can be aware and can get the communications quickly. Those are areas that sometimes would slip right through without much of the planning, but yeah, this is fantastic. Thank you very much. I appreciate your comments, Doug, and I think that pretty much sums it up. I will send it back over to the net, so W2LPN back to you through the air.
You know, something we encountered with the bike rides is that you need access to the decision makers, or you have to have SOPs that either are in advance or dynamically built across the day, so that if at 9 o'clock they say, when this happens, we have ordered this to happen. Okay, fine. If at 10 o'clock the same kind of thing comes in, you know, can you with reasonable assurity make the decision to, you know, use the same answer, or must you run it up the flagpole and get another decision? You know, those kinds of things become critical as the communications team integrates with the command team or supporting element of the command team. Sometimes they can, you know, just refer to, you know, the standing order from the previous activity or incident or whatever, and away you go. The other thing is that whoever is the command authority has to have the ability to speak for the organization, act for the organization, and represent their needs, et cetera, without having to go to a lot of trouble. So, you know, if there's someone injured, someone's got to go to the hospital, a representative of the organization has to go to the hospital, who is that going to be? They should have that worked out. If some set of supplies runs out, that can be a variable function depending on the life cycle of the event at that point, whether more is purchased or obtained or moved or whatever. Those are the kinds of things you have to work out and be very smart about. That makes sense? WTLCNW2CDT.
Yes, this is fantastic. Thank you. I appreciate it. I was a member of a first aid and rescue squad for a number of years, and all the things you're saying are kind of coming back to people on standby. Someone was always there with a point of contact, and now that you're mentioning different aspects of this, being able to make a standing order, or basically being able to act on a standing order to move someone to the hospital or to figure out how you're going to notify the police in an event that there is an emergency. These are all things that we would have had planned out with the rescue squad, and it's very similar. I guess just being on the communication side of it, you're just taking on a different role. But now this is very good. Thank you very much. I will I'll start to find out more about what the event is going to be down the road, and take a look at how it can come together and how we can kind of benefit or how they can benefit from our services, and how we can benefit by being out in the public and trying to do things in a positive and professional manner. So I definitely appreciate your help, and I'll look into this more. I'll be learning more about what they're liking to do over the next couple of weeks. So thank you very much. Back to net.
W2JEK again.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, one thing, Rick, whatever frequency you choose, it should be chosen ahead of time. And, you know, the people who are going to participate should be able to have that programmed into their radios before the event starts. I mean, not come down in the morning right before the event starts, but a day or two before, get that, or whenever. For example, we used like a 146.58 as a 2 meter simplex frequency, and we used another simplex frequency, which was actually the repeater output of one of W2ML's repeaters. But the idea is to have that thing, and today with some of these radios, you have to go through hoops, jump through hoops to get a program, so it would be good to get these radios programmed ahead of time. One thing I remember, a group of CERT radios were brought down by the CERT people to one of these River Ridge runs. They had a box of 12, and they needed three. One to the guy in the, one for each of the two CERT people that showed up, and one for the person up at the, where the run was, up by the, our guy who was the net control. And they couldn't find three that were programmed correctly. So they had to, you know, they said I had to give up on that. So getting your radios checked out ahead of time would be a good thing, one way or the other. Use a comments ring. Stay away from 146.52. That's a calling frequency. But like 146.55, 58, or some other simplex frequency, and find something that's not too busy, and try to use that, unless you're going to need to use a repeater. Back to that, W2JK.
That's good advice, Don. Very good advice. The other thing to think about is that use of tactical call signs is also a useful thing. That way there's some functional relationship or geographic relationship to who's calling in, especially if they're using multiple call signs at the site. What else? I guess that's the gist of it. So back to you, W2LCN. Pete, to be here.
Again, thank you guys. This is a tremendous amount of information, and that's why I was going to try and keep this to a short question, because I know that this can be extremely extensive, and you know, getting involved with other groups and really developing this into something that is a community service that also reaches out to other organizations. I think in the long term, on any event like this, it's a great idea. In the short term, I think it's probably best to do what Don has suggested in terms of picking a frequency and start to make your coordination between the key agencies in the area that you'll need to be able to work with, the police and the rest. Just to let them know that you'll be operating in the area and that you'll be a point of contact so that you can serve this community in the way that they need to be served, and at the same time make sure that you're acting in a way that reflects positively on the amateur radio community. But, I like the idea of picking a frequency and working through that and get some volunteers and get them programmed up ahead of time. All great suggestions. So we'll have to see how this stuff pans out, and I'll try and give you an update as we start to move down the road towards this thing. So thank you very much, and put it back over to you. W2FDM, back to you, KGDA.
Okay, very good. Very good. Anybody else? All right, thank you. I'll see you tomorrow night, maybe at the Caroline Club. I'm going to bring down my air grid and one other station. All right, 7-3, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. W2LCM. W2TTT. Anybody else? All right, well, I think... contributions. I'm a little pooped, so I think I'm going to call it a day, and wish you all a very nice evening, and thanks to Chestnut Ridge Radio Company for their repeater. By the way, yeah, the barrel auction was awesome last weekend, and the Chestnut Ridge luncheon is a week from today. So maybe we'll have to you for lunch up in Northvale. If you want the directions or when it is there, you drop me a note at www.tangotangotango@att.net. Anyway, 7-3-0 and be well. This is K2BARW2TTT. Restraining the repeater to normal amateur radio use.
You really must be tired, Gordon. I listed a comment. It wasn't the comment I made to the tool thing. But that's okay. I think you need a rest, and I can save this for another week. K2EIR.
Like the old radio mysteries, tune in next week. It's W2JK.
Oh, it's one way, you know, getting people curious is one way to keep attendance up, isn't it?
I have one of those tools, K2ZO.
You mean the Heathkit tool?
That thing probably cost about a nickel to make. And it was in every Heathkit. And it was a very useful tool.
Indeed, that's why I hope I find mine again. mine was colored red. What about yours?
Same thing, red.
Hi, Gaborn, WI2W.
And I think the opposite side was formed so you could adjust the coils. It might have been usable as a little screwdriver, not with any force. But I seem to remember that the opposite end had a use too. I'm not sure. I may be mixing it up with yet a second tool. And it would make a lot of sense to this as a nut driver or whatever holder to have two different sizes, one on each end. And I don't remember what mine has.
K2JEK, I think AK has, there's a small piece of metal that slid in there. Acted as a screwdriver, but I think that the each end could be used as a nut driver for two different sizes of the screw.
Yeah, well, these kits were terrific. I still miss them.
And they really were. And good evening, Steve. They had lots of good things. I actually ended up one night where I couldn't find the doggone thing, and I had a 632 nut. And the screw was through the chassis, and it was a very narrow spot, and I could not get that thing down there. And I ended up going upstairs and getting a pencil and taking a little bit of crazy glue and gluing the number 6 nut to the eraser on a brand new pencil because it was squared off, and then pushing that down and twisting it in and pulling it off when I got it on there. But it drove me nuts trying to make it work. Finally, I came up with that idea because I could not find my Heathkit little gizmo.
Yes, indeed. Well, that's why these tools are so fantastic. Many times I've been in those awkward situations. You know, you give a guy a hammer and he tries to use it on everything. And what you learn from tools is that there often are situations. You know, your fingers are too big. It's a delicate spot. If you drop it, it's going to go down the sink. Whatever, you know. It's just great to have the right tool.
Yeah, if you only have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Right.
Yeah, who was that other station where we wanted everybody to have a turn?
Yeah, this is WI2W, Steve. I just got back from dinner at my sister's house just as Gordon was closing off the net, so sorry I missed it.
Yeah, hi. WI2W. Yeah, early in the net, someone, I think it was I'm going to get his call. It's like US in his call, but I don't remember. I think WU2S, that's probably it. So there's a website called homemadetools.net where people have all these wonderful ideas they're sharing about tools they can make for various things. I haven't been up there, so I don't know what it looks like, but that was the origin of this discussion originally.
Yeah, I just surfed there. It looks like there's a lot of stuff. I'm seeing 16 categories on the homepage.
Yeah, I'll have to go take a look, but yeah, that's good. Okay, gentlemen, I am going to sign here on the HF, and I'm going to turn on the HF. What I was going to talk about tonight is I built a certain antenna, which I'm using indoors, which is eliminating most of my noise, so I want to evaluate it some more. And so I'm going to, since this power supply is needed for the other rig, I'm going to get off the air here and plug in the other rig. 73 to you all. It's been a pleasure. I enjoy your company, and thanks for the responses. Always nice to hear what you have to say. 73 guys. Steve, you got, I'm forgetting calls. You got Jim here. You got enough people. You can keep on talking. I'm going to turn it over to you, Steve. K2EIR.
No. You can't go without telling us what your new antenna project is. Over.
Well, this is what I was going to say for the next net, but okay, I could do it twice. Yeah. I moved into a condo a year and a half ago, and I discovered I had a terrible noise problem. I have a ham friend about 1,500 feet away in a different condo. He has the same noise problem. And as a matter of fact, I had it where I rented a slightly different direction, and again, another 1,500, 2,000 feet from here. There I was lucky that I could take a hole that the telephone company had drilled for a second line that was no longer being used and put some coax out through it, and I buried it out to a tree 30 feet back and shot a wire up in the tree, and that was far enough away from the building that I didn't have interference. But here, the interference is all over. It's like I've traced it to the ducts, to the power wiring, to everything. I'm just cable TV. I'm just surrounded by noise emitters. The frying sound of power lines. And it's 24/7. All the bands. It's wide band. So it's been a terrible thing. Now, if I go out to my car 20, 30 feet away and I set up a ham stick, it's nice and quiet. So I've tried the MFJ noise blanker, and I can't null out the noise here, and it has worked in other places for me, so, like the rental property used to be, and let me let this reset. That's the backdrop, noise. One solution I've thought of that, with the help of Gordon, that I haven't implemented, because I have very little time, is I could put a software-defined radio and a laptop out in my car, and with antenna or something, and use the remote control receiver. I am able to transmit from here with a ham stick. I have worked the Canary Islands, for example, so I'm not worried about transmitting. I'm worried about hearing, because if I have an S9 noise level, which is what it typically is, I'm not going to go on a frequency that I think is blank and start calling, because chances are I could be interfering with somebody. So that's the background situation. So you want to hear what I did tonight or yesterday, really. I bought a hula hoop a few months ago, and I got some coax from the cable guy when he was redoing the vendor. They once had Optimum, then they went to Fios, and then they went back to Optimum. So the Optimum guy was there putting in cabling in the fitness center where I go. Let me let this reset again. And so I got about 8 feet, 10 feet of cable from them. Now this is like RG6, and I've discovered that it actually is like triple shielded. It's got a braided. First, it has, I think, right under the vinyl, for lack of another word, the sheet around the coax. Right under that, I think, is some foil. Then there's a braided outer conductor, and then some more foil, so it's like triply shielded. And what I did, of course, is I put it around the hula hoop, and I made a shielded loop. It's the hula hoop is about 2.5 feet in diameter, so the shielded loop, this is a W1CER design. He was around in the 60s, the technical director or whatever of the ARRL, but I loved this stuff. I built a lot of stuff that he's had. Let me let it reset again. collect goes around the loop at the very top. You just connect the center conductors and leave the shields untouched. Come down to the bottom, and what I did here is what we're supposed to do in the Doug DeMaul, that's his name, W1CER's design. He put a capacitor in a mini box and set it with coax. What I did is I put the two shields together, and I wasn't successfully able to solder it. It made the aluminum stuff, but I, even if it's a cold solder joint, some wire connecting it, it's still got some continuity. So now I have the two center conductors coming out to some ladder lines, 300 ohm, 600 ohm ladder line, 450 ohm ladder line, for about a foot, maybe less, feeding a 4-to-1 ballon, and so then I have coax, and that's going to 3. And I've used that around the room, and where I used to have, with a compared to a random wire, the random wire gives me about F8, F9 noise, more like F7, F8 noise, and most of the signals that I can hear are only about an F unit higher than the noise level. With the loop, I get 1 or 2 F units lower signal with F0 noise. So far I'm loving it. But tonight, let me let it reset one more time. Tonight, while experimenting and taping up, putting more tape to hold the coax, I suddenly was hearing a lot more noise. So I don't know if I broke a wire conductor or just didn't have the right spot or some more garbage came on in the environment. But so far, it really does reduce the noise a lot more, and it's going to make it possible for me to use one antenna for transmit and use this to receive and to be able to operate, say, on 40 meters and enjoy myself in ham radio again. Okay, Steve, you asked. I answered. K2EIR.
Jim, comments?
Probably put him to sleep.
JK.
JK, go ahead.
To JK, I built a thing. One thing I had was a radio, a 10-tech QFP transceiver for 20 meters. It was a kit. The IF frequency was 6.144 megahertz, which is some kind of a computer crystal. However, on short wave, 6.14 is Deutsche Welle, a German broadcast station, which I think is actually has a relay down in the Caribbean up in Canada someplace. It comes in very well on, right through the front end of my transceiver. And on my 20-meter ground plane, it was, you could hear Deutsche Welle in the background. How do I get rid of it? Well, the little rock loop antenna that I put together, that cut it out, because it's high Q antenna, and it, that reason it eliminated the Dutch well in the background. And I have transmitted on that small loop too. I carry that portable, and for a while I used that at my mother-in-law's place down in Pennsylvania. Back to that WQKK.
Okay, we'll see if Jim's there or who else is here. You know what? I think you had recommended, someone on the net had recommended a loop to me before when I brought up this whole noise problem. But I had already tried a loop, but it wasn't a shielded loop. I had tried a loop around my deck, and it did not help at all. So I was a little leery of that. But this loop, and I also had built direction finding loops, and while the trouble with that is the loops were so small that, only could really hear the strongest signals. So I didn't want to fool around with that. I wanted to be able to actually do normal QSOs. But this loop is much bigger, being a Hulu size rather than an 8-inch diameter size. So it seems to be working. It was good advice.
K2ZO, are you still here or did you go? I guess we lost him. Well, that's real interesting. I think it's Howie, Steve here. So at the top, you just have the two center conductors together, and the shields are broken. And then at the bottom, you don't have...